Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, Shador Sanders, Kenny Pickett, get on out of here. Scoot, get the hell out. Sent to the Las Vegas Raiders for a fifth round pick. Kenny Pickett gone. And I had to say at the beginning of the show, we are one QB closer to Shador Sanders. Yeah! Yeah! We're also one QB closer to Deshaun Watson. John Greco joins us right now on the fan
boo,
hotline.
Yay, boo.
That's a fun pass to do. For me. Go get your slide whistle and make it slide down.
Don't you call Mine's for slide whistles, you bastard, because I got one right there. Hello, John.
Guys, good morning. Happy roster cut day, and we are here. I mean, after a really long preseason, which felt like an eternity, it's exciting to actually talk about week one football. It's on the horizon.
I felt it went pretty quickly. I felt camp went pretty quickly. I mean, hell, you barely saw them. They were out of town for 2 weeks. There wasn't a chance for a grind there. What'd you think of the Kenny Pickett trade?
In a weird way, I was a little surprised. I think the injury kind of maybe nudged them toward that decision, because, you know, the three of us have talked, and the folks who listen to your show, we've been talking about this for several weeks, and his lack of availability, I think, never really pushed Joe Flacco or forced their hand to try to make a tough decision. And I think at some point, you know, there was the two rookies kind of traded weeks, so of who looked good, who didn't, and we were hitting the panic button on both of them at times. And then it was like, oh, okay, these guys could both be serviceable backups, and we know they're going to get an opportunity at some point this season. So I just think that injury, the hamstring, and how it potentially could linger, forced their hand. They went with Joe, which, you know, maybe a lot of people didn't think that was ever going to be a competition or issue or tough decision. But I was a little surprised. So now you're going in with, you know, your two rookie draft picks at 2 and 3, and Joe Flacco, 4 years old, 17th or 18th year. I can't even remember what it is now.
18.
And yeah, I mean, that's kind of what everybody expected. But I thought that they would have kept Pickett and gone with 4. I know that's a little bit unconventional and a head scratcher or some, but just having some veteran kind of experience and leadership there in the event that they have to make a change from Joe, I thought would have been a little bit easier transition into the rookie debut. But, you know, I feel like, you know, the team obviously feels that they were, you know, ready to move on, and those guys are ready to have an opportunity if and when they're ready to move away from Joe. And let's hope that comes way late in the season, or, you know, he has the flu, like a Michael Jordan flu game type situation. Let's hope they're not, you know, in the dumps record wise, and then you're forced to go to a rookie, and then we have all these awkward conversations with, you know, the season's off the rails. Let's hope Joe goes in there, looks terrific, looks polished, looks sharp, like we're expecting him to be. And this conversation happens, you know, way, way later in the season.
If Kenny would have been healthy and Kenny played, do you believe that there's a possibility they could have moved off of Joe Flacco, traded him, or traded even one of the two rookies?
I don't know if they would have traded one of the two rookies, but I do. I honestly think that would have been a conversation and a decision they would have had to have made. And look, we'll never know. None of us will ever truly know. Maybe the players don't even know. I think it's one of those things where this front office, the staff, likes to kind of have everything out on the table and have all options open and available. And it just never happened. Like I said, we will never know. The injury really kind of, you know, derailed any true quarterback competition. And Joe looked good. I mean, let's be honest. Every time that I was watching, or everything you heard out of training camp, He looked good. He looked polished. He looked prepared and ready. And that's what we've talked about, that the veterans on the team and the guys that are on this team that were, you know, convinced to maybe stay on. And I'm talking some of the veterans, Joel, Miles, with that whole situation in the spring. Maybe that was the pitch that, hey, we're rolling with Joe, and we know what we're going to expect with him, and we're trying to get some of that magic, that playoff magic that he brought here a few years ago. And that was the sell, and that's what we're going to hope to find out.
John Greco with us right now, talking Browns. So after Flacco, obviously, it's Dylan Gabriel right now as the number two. Dylan was all over the place this camp, had some really, really rough moments for a while, then kind of blossomed the week of Philadelphia. And then we saw it kind of come to a head this last preseason game where, you know, he had some formidable drives, some nice throws. Also, you know, was at times a little inaccurate too. So you saw a mixed bag overall. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. And sometimes we just have to take a step back. And Browns fans and media, you know, we've been in this situation since the three of us were born. And we're so hungry for a winning quarterback and someone that can just be the chosen one and the guy that we can put up a statue of, you know, on the lakefront and just be our savior. And sometimes we just have to take a step back. You know, Dylan Gabriel's a third round draft pick. I think it's a little bit unfair and unrealistic to assume that he's just going to come in and look like, you know, Andrew Luck or somebody that's a first round pick, a top 10 pick. There's a reason why he wasn't a first or second rounder. So what does he give you, though? I think, you know, you started to mention some of the things, and we've talked about them on your show. He's a very smart football player. He's very in tune with the offense. He can lead. He can execute. He's a quiet leader, someone that's organized, can make the accurate throws, can get rid of the ball on time, which is very, very important in today's NFL because there are some absolute dogs on the other side of the ball rushing the passer. So, you know, yes, does he have, you know, is he not the ideal height? Of course. But can he be a smart player and overcome some of those challenges? I think so. And when this offensive line is healthy, I think that they are going to give him adequate time, or whoever's back there, adequate time to deliver. And the question really remains is, what about the weapons and the guys in that room on the field surrounding him? Are they going to get open and make enough plays to give any of these quarterbacks a chance to succeed? But that's kind of what I see from Dylan Gabriel. Of course, he had kind of a rocky preseason, as any rookie quarterback would. As you know, how rare is it that you see a quarterback, or especially a rookie, come out and just be lights out from day one? I think it's rare, and I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect that, especially out of a third rounder. So I'm excited to see what he has and what his future holds. And I know the guys in that offensive room love him. They like the way he prepares. They like his leadership qualities and characteristics. And I think he hopefully has a bright future.
All right, let the record show. We've talked about Kenny Pickett first because of the news. We then moved on to Joe Flacco. And then it was Kenny Pickett's time. So Shador Sanders,
how dare you?
Your thoughts?
Look, where he is on the depth chart right now and what we saw out of him on the preseason, you know, I feel bad that it ended the way it did for him. It kind of, you know, kind of skidded out of there toward the end of the preseason, and he had some tough plays. And I will kind of echo what I just said about Dylan Gabriel. I mean, you're seeing a guy that was taken in the fifth round who, you know, shows flashes, who I think could be a quality NFL quarterback, but you know, he's got to kind of get away from some of those things that we saw on tape, drifting back out of the pocket. And I know a lot of people are arguing about the guys that were in front of him, the offensive line, with a lot of those guys, you know, not going to be on the team or not going to see, you know, a lot of action on Sundays. But you just saw things where, you know, when he had success earlier in the preseason, we talked about some of the things that I was telling you guys that made him successful, in the pocket, being firm in the pocket, trusting the guys around him. It looked like he was a little bit shaky in this last preseason game, and rightfully so. There was flashes of other teams' helmets all over the place. So, you know, I don't blame the guy, but, you know, you can't retreat like that, and it's not college anymore, and it's not Tecmo Bowl. You can't just run back 20 yards and give up sacks. It makes everybody look bad, and then people want to just point fingers. But, you know, he is where he is on the depth chart. He's going to be on this roster. We're going to hope to see him develop over the year, and who knows, maybe he's going to get an opportunity earlier than later. We don't know. Hopefully not. Hopefully Joe Flacco's in there and they're, you know, competitive and winning games and in the mix and in the question, and we're talking about, you know, competing. But he is where he is right now. Moving into week one, it's going to be put to bed, and he's just going to be in the meeting rooms preparing for each week and preparing for each opponent. He's going to see how you do that in season from Joe Flacco and see how you get on that regular schedule and learn and become a better pro. And I think that he's a guy that now, you know, is probably hungry for that next opportunity. Maybe that left a bad taste in his mouth in that last preseason game, and rightfully so. So the next time we see him, it won't be next preseason where it's the fourth string offensive line against, you know, fourth string defensive line. He's going to be in there with some dogs. So, you know, I'm excited for that next opportunity, but hopefully it's later than sooner.
What goes through it? John Greco joining us on the show. What goes through the veteran's head once you begin the youth movement at that position at quarterback? What goes like for like Wyatt Teller, Ethan Posick, Joel Batonio, Jack Conklin? What are they thinking?
Yeah, they've been around that tree. So, you know, when you're on the offensive line and a guy goes down or is replaced or decisions are made or whatever have you, and you have a young guy in there, your attention to detail has to improve. And I don't want to say your play style has to change, but there's talk in the offensive line room, and the position coach knows it. I mean, he comes in and he says, "Hey, look, we got to hold our blocks a little bit longer. We have to execute better. We have to be sharper. We're probably going to see some more elaborate defenses, some different looks to try to confuse a young quarterback, because Joe Flacco has seen literally every defense and blitz and pressure and situation imaginable. But has Dylan Gabriel, has Shedeur Sanders? No. So if those guys are in there, that's what offensive linemen can expect. They can expect junk on defense, and they're going to have to respond and react and pick it up, because their job then becomes so paramount in protecting this guy, keeping him upright, and giving him a chance to execute. And that's really what their mindset is. It's as easy as that.
John Greco joining us here on the Fan Hotline. All right. Was there anybody who stuck out to you offensively, defensively in the preseason that we should be paying attention to?
Well, you know, being a Mac guy, Harold Fannin, obviously didn't get a whole lot of reps, but I'm really excited about him. You know, obviously the
does he make it? I'm going to point this question to a different direction. If things ain't going our way, does he make it easier to trade away David Njoku halfway through the year?
Put you on the spot. That definitely, you know, that conversation will definitely make their decision easier. Yes. More difficult. I think that comes on the table. As we've heard David Njoku's name around trade deadline now the past few years. But if you start to see a young star developing, or someone that's shining and catching passes and being able to block, and being a weapon in the red zone, which I think is really hamstrung this offense in recent years, because they've been able to move the ball. We've seen that, but, you know, scoring six instead of three or missing three has been the issue. So, yeah, if you have a young guy that's in there, it could be have a bright future and be a star in this league. Yeah, of course, you know, that creates conversations for guys that are, you know, starting to get a little bit older and they're getting more expensive by the year. In particular, when you have a situation where this team is in the cap, definitely that creates a conversation. So I'll talk about a guy. This is low hanging fruit. Aiden Huntington. You know, obviously I saw Baldy breaking him down. I was listening to guys on the radio, and they were going crazy, and it seemed like that guy was all over the field. So in a room defensively, where, you know, we need them to be the strength and we need that position group to lead and stay healthy, having a young guy that's an undrafted free agent could be a bright spot and come in and provide depth and maybe disrupt some opposing offensive lines and hit some quarterbacks. I think that would be huge. So that was a guy that impressed me. And being a Matt Guy Herald fan, and even though he went to Bowling Green, I'm excited about his future.
Hey, if Ethan Posick can't go in the opener, how big of a deal is that?
That's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. Ethan has, you know, been a quality starter, a veteran, a guy that has led this offensive line now for a while. These guys are used to playing with, especially in week one. That's something that you want to get right, where it's right out of the gate. That's the last thing you want to have to worry about, a center quarterback exchange. Now, obviously, Joe Flacco has played with a ton of different centers, so I don't think that would be an issue, but anytime you're in week one where you really don't have a lot of tape on the opposing team. Now, obviously, Cincinnati's a divisional foe. You know what you're going to get. They know the personnel, but you really want to be as buttoned up as you can and have the center, the guy that's leading the offense and making the calls on the field, be confident and prepared and ready. So, you know, if he's ready to go, you know, how's his health? Is he moving at 100% or 90%? But if not, if he's not in there, is the guy behind him ready to lead the offense and make all the calls and in pressure situations when the defense is moving, adjusting last second, last minute, right before the snap? Is he getting guys in the best spots to pick up pressures, to pick up blitzes? Time will tell. I'm excited. But, yeah, it's a big deal.
John, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Guys, next Tuesday, we will be close. I'm excited. Great talking to you.
John Greco on the Fan Hotline.
We turn to a man who does a fantastic job calling the Browns games on the Browns Radio Network. Plus, he's got Yahoo Sports inside coverage. And some days, you just see him on Instagram walking on the beach, taking a nice leisurely walk on
the
beach.
What a life.
With you, talking sports, he is the man, the myth, the legend, Andrew Siciliano.
It's good to be Siciliano.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I don't know that there's a myth or a legend. I'm just a guy who's happy to be here. I'm just a man sitting in his kitchen. Yeah.
Like any other man.
That's true.
Yeah.
Having a cup of Joe. Feeling good, or maybe having some suds with some friends. There's nothing. What is it? Nothing makes you feel more like a man than no mustard. Off. Yes. How about mayonnaise? I'm sure there's none in your house, right?
No, I love mustard. No, why would there ever be mayonnaise in my house? Are you kidding me?
I know. I'm sorry. We all know how you feel about mayonnaise. Yes.
Like, why would I put toxic sludge in my home?
Oh man, the mayonnaise community is coming after you. You're going to be erased from the mayonnaise community, just so you know that.
Good. I was never in it.
All right.
Why would...
You know who else was never in it?
Yeah, tell
Kenny
him, Andy.
Kenny Pickett. He was never in it. What do you think?
Oh, I don't think that's the case. I think he was absolutely in it.
We never got to see him.
So, I mean, he was in it, except he didn't get the opportunity. He pulled his hammy. You know, the fascinating question to me is... what would have happened if he had truly been healthy?
Yeah.
And would he have won the job? We're never going to know. I do know that there are plenty of people that were excited to see what he could do. He was 15-10 as a starter in Pittsburgh, and he had the one start last year, week 17 for the Eagles. He wasn't always dealt the best hand in Pittsburgh, and I'm not a Kenny Pickett truther here, but, you know, whether it was the OC, the O-line, whatever – right? The guy had a winning record. He had a bunch of fourth quarter comebacks. And I think that the Browns felt that they had a piece of clay here that they could mold and give him another shot, and that there was still upside and he was still young and he had a pedigree, obviously, coming out as a first round pick. But it never happened. He got hurt. And you know what? I'm happy for him. And I think it works for both teams here, truly, guys. This is one of those rare win-wins. Pete Carroll said Saturday, or Sunday, I beg your pardon, that they needed an experienced backup, and they're looking anywhere because Aiden O'Connell broke his wrist and he's out a couple of months. I thought Kenny Pickett, but there are a lot of moving pieces on the veteran quarterback market right now, and you got back the pick that you gave up. Actually, I'd frame it this way. You traded Dorian Thompson-Robinson for a 5, basically, because you gave up DTR and a 5 to get Pickett, and now you flip Pickett for a 5. So you basically, I mean, Kenny Pickett was just moving through your building. You flipped DTR for a 5, which a couple of years later is the original draft pick with which you took him. That works, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't Josh Dobbs involved in this too? What do they get for Josh Dobbs? Was that a fifth? I thought Josh was
Josh Dobbs. I don't know. Josh Dobbs had nothing to do with this trade.
But he might as well. I mean, something about that round and just making sure.
Group tours of NASA involved with Josh Dobbs.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
The one thing you said, Andrew, and I agree with you, you never got a chance to see Kenny Pickett. Was it worth? Wouldn't you? I would have rather seen what he could do than go get a fifth round draft choice.
Well, when were you going to see what he could do?
I was going to see what he could do if Joe Flacco got hurt or if Joe wasn't as effective as I wanted to be.
Which obviously was a scenario, but let's just play the hypothetical because I hear what you're saying, but let's play the hypothetical. So let's say one of those two that you just mentioned happens late in September, early in October.
Yep.
Would you still be as excited to see Kenny Pickett? Or would at that point, and who knows what the win-loss record is, and hopefully it's positive and not negative, or at that point, would you and everyone else be clamoring to see one of the rookies?
I would still want to see Pickett because I included him with the rookies as a young guy who, by chance, perhaps could be a guy that I could have on this team for a couple of years.
And I think they thought he would have been the perfect bridge as well. And I think, as I just said, that they felt he had the upside. But now there's a logjam. Yep. As willing as they were able, as willing as they were to keep four quarterbacks, it's easier to keep three. We all agree. Nobody disagrees on that. So they're keeping three. And I think Dylan Gabriel has proven, and that's the other side of the story here. You feel more comfortable trading Kenny Pickett when you see what Dylan Gabriel did. Granted, against a bunch of Rams that are heading to the practice squad, but what he did this past Saturday at Huntington Bank Field.
All right, so what is the path then for these quarterbacks in the future?
Depends how well Joe Flacco plays. Depends what the win-loss record is, right?
Right.
Jimmy Haslam said a month ago that at one point you do have to see what the kids can do. You do have the two number ones next year. Look, in a dream scenario, there's a magical Joe Flacco-led role into January. We would all love to see that. He'd win another Comeback Player of the Year award. Can you win Comeback Player of the Year twice?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not? That would be amazing if you could.
It really would, actually. Look,
that would be the comeback player of the year, wouldn't it?
That's the movie we'd all like to see.
Yeah.
Don't know if it's going to happen, but at one point, you need to see what the kids can do. I hope it is later rather than sooner, right?
Right.
I am bullish on what Joe Flacco can do in this offense, and I've been saying this for 6 weeks, long before he won the starting job, and it wasn't by default. Like, go back to Carolina 2 weeks ago. With eight quarterbacks there, the Browns had five. Deshaun was actually on that trip, but obviously he was in street clothes. He wasn't playing. So between the eight quarterbacks that were throwing passes that day in Carolina, Joe Flacco was the best. He was the best. On the other field, you had Bryce Young and Andy Dalton, who can still sling it a little bit, obviously. And then you had Jack Plummer, who just got cut. But of the eight that were there, the oldest one there was the best. So let's go. Roll the ball out there against the Bengals defense that's been retooled that gets Trey Hendrickson back. I don't know that we're going to get a shootout. I think the Browns defense is going to have a good day. But then again, what's the secondary look like against Joe Burrow? I mean, this one's fun for me, guys. Like, I'm excited to see Joe Flacco.
I was hoping that whoever was a quarterback for the Browns would throw passes to Diontae Johnson. But apparently he showed in practice what he showed in the little bit of action he had in the preseason, Andrew, and didn't make the team. Are you surprised by that? Because I thought after what happened last year, if he was ever going to make a team, you would think he would have been ready to roll. Maybe he just doesn't have it anymore.
I would frame it this way. A month ago, I thought he was probably going to make the team. As camp progressed, look, he made some plays. He certainly did. And I think he still has the quickness off the line. He could still move. His hands were a bit suspect. I mean, in Philly, dropped one right on the goal line, led to a pick right between the one and the six. I do think he could still play. I do think he had some value. I'm not here to trash the guy. I think I have always said this. I've always said that. We're always asked, how about this? can he be relied upon?
Yep.
Right. If you go into September and you have a game or two in which he's not getting the football, can he be relied upon? Deontay, everything I hear was, you know, towed the line and actually, you know, was a good teammate. Like, nothing bad to say. Nothing bad to say. But Gage Lardavan came on, and I like Gage Lardavan as part of his team, but still got to figure out the kick return thing as well. And then you added Isaiah Bond. Looks like DeAndre Carter is going to stick. I thought that was always going to be the case. That's why he finally played in the third and final preseason game when all the other starters came out there. That tells you everything. But when Isaiah Bond came in, you guarantee his contract, it becomes a numbers game. And maybe Deontay goes somewhere else and gets picked up and proves everyone wrong, but it wasn't going to be here once Bond signed.
Do you expect to see Quinshon Judkins anytime soon?
I don't know. I'm done predicting when we're going to see him.
Yeah,
that's not to throw back in your face.
I get it, Andrew.
Yeah. I just don't know where it is. It's a couple of weeks ago, I thought we'd seen him. I thought we would see him sooner rather than later, a couple of weeks ago. If you asked me that question 2 weeks ago, I would think it was sooner rather than later. When the legal situation, at least the criminal side of things, got wrapped up in Florida, I thought something would be imminent, but it's still not. What I am curious as well is, you know, at roster cutdown day, how the NFL deals with discipline, not just for Quinshon, but for players around the league. Like, do they give teams clarity? DeMarcus Robinson, for example, in San Francisco, do teams get clarity at cutdown day? So maybe there's some movement in the next 24 hours, but that's just me speculating. I don't have any insight there.
Is Dustin Hopkins on this team after 4 o'clock?
It's a great question. My gut's going to say no.
Ooh.
I don't know if it's Andre Schmidt. I like Dustin Hopkins, but I'm just kind of reading the tea leaves. I don't know that they're moving on, but I do think, and this is, let's go back to the Shador thing. And I'm not even going to, you know, like, respect the online conspiracy nonsense. I mean, it makes my head hurt. But what no one wants to point out is that with the kicker question, it was really important to see Andre Schmidt get an end of game situation on Saturday.
So Jeff said.
Yeah. And Nathan and I talked about that in the moment in the booth, right? Like, hey, the Rams are, if this extra point goes in and the Rams take the lead, it's going to set up a situation. We weren't even thinking about the quarterbacks at that point. It's going to set up a situation where potentially the Browns could drive down the field and kick a winning field goal. And that's what we wanted to see. We talked about it the entire last 10 minutes of the game. And then Andre Schmidt did the job. You needed to find out, can Andre Schmidt, who had an exemplary college career, can Andre Schmidt be the guy you rely upon? Now, it's the final preseason game. Is it the same pressure as you would potentially face on September 7th at Huntington Bank Field? No, it's different. But they got in position, and a veteran quarterback was more likely to get you into position to see Schmidt kick, especially considering the way the previous 5 drives had went. And that, to me, is what all the screaming heads on TV don't understand the context on.
Rumblings that Pierre Strong is going to be let go today. Is that because Imani Marshall made the team, or because they're looking at who else is getting cut and bringing in another back?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I've always been a Pierre Strong fan.
Me
Nathan
too.
And I both, actually.
Yeah, me too.
I think wide zone, you get him in space, and he finds a crease, and he's got some speed. We never really saw it happen. He's been a core special teams guy the last 2 years. He's practice squad eligible, but you know, there are teams that need running backs out there. The Houston Texans come to mind. I mean, there's some doubt in Houston that Joe Mixon even plays this year. So I would love to see him back. I think Imani Marshall, you know, the blitz pickup where Flacco got sacked wasn't one to grow on Saturday from Imani Marshall. And that's the big thing with rookie running backs, whether it's Marshall, whether it's Pierre Strong, or whether it's eventually Quinshon Judkins, is can you be trusted in pass pro? only the Browns know the answer to that right now, but I would love to see him. I would love to see him and Strong stick around.
Andrew, as always, thank you very much. You have an extra week now to prepare for Fact or Fiction on the Browns Radio Network pregame show, so knock it out.
Yeah, I mean, can we talk about this?
Sure. I got about 30 seconds.
I truly enjoy doing it. Just the random there are no guidelines. You just, at the end of it, go like, eh, and then randomly decide, A, to pick a winner, or B, just to like, eh, I'm moving on.
Yeah,
almost as if it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's the rule, man.
He doesn't give out prizes either.
No, we do give out prizes.
No, that hockey thing doesn't fly.
Yes, it does. I have an old medal that was won by our kids in Pee Wee's, and I took tape and I put it on the outside of it, and I made it. Did you cherish the medal last year? Did you even win it last year? I can't remember.
No, I don't even remember. That's my point. It's like you go to a boxing match, and then at the end of the match, the judges just go, eh, we're not going to pick a winner. And
I tend to think
that's
of
what
it.
You do. You're like,
you being so close to Hollywood will remember the great Drew Carey show that originally appeared overseas and then here. Whose line is it anyway? Because the points don't really matter, and there really is no winner.
Andy's trying to do Wheel of Fortune without the wheel.
No, I'm trying to do.
That's what's going on.
I'm trying to do Whose Line Is It Anyway? I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to lie. Give away free bags of air on the show.
Invest in the game if there's no winner declared.
Just to get your knowledge.
Why?
Andrew, we got to roll, man. I can't debate. We'll debate this on the next Fact or Fiction. How's that sound?
All right. Get out of here.
All right. Go study. Andrew Siciliano, you know him. You love him. He is the voice of the Browns these days on the Browns Radio Network. Yahoo Sports Inside Coverage is his other platform that he is rolling right now, too.
Mary Kay Cabot joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. She's never had a Thanksgiving turkey that's tasted like a carton of Doral's. Hello, Mary Kay!
Hello, guys. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. We are sent sportsbook odds like a few times a day because, you know, we're radio show hosts. And we got a thing of odds, and it said the first coach fired in 2025. Kevin Stefanski has the fifth best odds, 15-2. He's tied with Dave Canales. Is Kevin Stefanski in any danger of losing his position during the regular season?
I don't think so. I really, really don't think so. And the reason why I feel that way is because the Browns are in franchise quarterback finding mode. This season is all about figuring out what they have in Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders so they can move forward into next year's draft and decide, can they get their hands on Arch Manning or one of these other excellent quarterbacks coming out next year? That's why they're poised with the two first round picks. And I just don't think that that Jimmy Haslam is going to hold Kevin Stefanski's or Andrew Berry's feet to the fire this year.
Well, Mary Kay, obviously, this has been an all-time different. I'm not going to say bad. We have no idea. Maybe they got the most out of these quarterbacks, but an all-time different evaluation period to the point where they were almost running it like a college program. Two fields, the different quarterbacks, getting the reps when they can. And in the end, they said goodbye to Kenny Pickett. If Kenny Pickett was healthy, do you think there's a likelihood that he would be starting week one against Cincinnati?
I think I do think that there was a chance that could have happened. I think they really liked Kenny a lot, and I think the hamstring injury really derailed his chances of trying to start for this team. And then they looked at it and realized, well, if they stick with Joe for a period of time, then they're going to want to turn it over to the rookies. They're not going to want to have that interim period of Kenny after that. So once he suffered the hamstring injury, he was out of the competition. And it's unfortunate for him and for the Browns, I think, because when they did trade for Kenny Pickett, I do truly believe that they had him in mind as their bridge quarterback for this season. And then it just kind of fizzled out when that happened. And so it made sense for them to trade him when ultimately in the beginning, they did plan to keep all four quarterbacks at least for a period of time into the season and see what might happen with someone needing a starter or whatever. But I think the hamstring injury just kind of threw a monkey wrench into their plans.
Yeah, but Mary Kay, like, if they plan on him being the bridge quarterback, I mean, why even trade him for a fifth-round pick? I just don't understand it.
Well, I probably would not have done it myself, and I said that on a podcast the other day. I probably would not have done it, because I do think that you want to have that second veteran quarterback in the event that you need someone else early on besides Joe Flacco. I mean, you have to be really ready now and believe that Dillon Gabriel can get that job done. And sometimes a rookie can come in and do that, and sometimes they can't. And you never really know until they get out there and they try it. So I actually would have kept Kenny around just to see how things were going to go with Joe in the early going, and not being 100% certain that Dillon would be ready to take it over early on in the season. But they've seen enough apparently in Dillon where they feel like if Joe can't get the job done, they're going over to Dillon.
Mary Kay, their running back situation is very interesting and, dare I say, dicey to start out the year, given Pierre Strong is gone. You have Jerome Ford. They just picked up that Arkansas tailback. And Dillon Sampson, that's all you have. Teams typically, when it comes to running backs, they have more than what the Browns have right now. How do you feel about their situation? And are we getting any indication anytime soon on Quinshon Judkins?
Well, let me just say that the Quinshon Judkins situation has been a mystery. Nobody wants to talk about it at all. It's very difficult to find out any information whatsoever on what's going on with Quinshon Judkins. The only thing that I know for sure and that I've gotten confirmation of is that the NFL is still reviewing his case. Now, is that part of the holdup of why he's not here? I don't know. I don't know if there are discussions going on about the contract as it possibly relates to any NFL discipline, or if the contract has something more to do with the fact that 7 of the second round picks have gotten full guarantees and he wants that. I don't really know. It's really, really hard. The Browns will not say a word about anything. Usually you can get an inkling of something. And again, the only thing that I know is that the NFL is still taking a look at this, even though his charges have been dropped. Now, we do know also that when we talked to Jimmy Haslam earlier in training camp, that he said he was cautiously optimistic that Quinshon would be here. And I have heard rumblings that other people feel that way too, inside the organization. So I guess everyone can just kind of wait and hope that before too long he will show up on the doorstep. But it has been shrouded in mystery.
I would also ask, you know, yesterday the news came down about Rashee Rice and his suspension, 6 games. Is it just a pecking order thing that they have, you know, so many guys in the queue every single year at any given time in the NFL when it comes to player discipline, and they just got to wait their turn? I mean, how many cases can they all be investigating at the same time?
Well, you're right about that. Once you hear about one guy getting his discipline handed down, you know, you start to hear about the others shortly thereafter. So when that news happened yesterday, I thought, oh, I've got to be at the ready because something could happen with Quinshon at any time. And I've heard a number of different things. Now, remember, the NFL is not only reviewing his case, but also that of Isaiah Bond and Devin Bush on the Browns. So they do have 3 different things going on here in terms of Cleveland. And I don't know when something is going to happen, but it does seem like they are working through their punch list now. No pun intended. Sorry about that.
No, we understand. That's a lot. That's 3 guys. I mean, Isaiah Bond is expected to start contributing on Sunday, for crying out loud, Mary Kay. I mean, that's... You know, I want to get excited for the season and think, you know, maybe they could hit the over a little bit. Not that, you know, 6 wins is anything to get really excited over, because I like the offensive line and I like the defensive front. But man, my God, when you're saying that, it's like, well, if they announce it today, it's like these are starters that are off your football team.
Well, in the case of Isaiah Bond, I had been told that no discipline is expected. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, because, like I said, whenever I talk to the NFL, they just keep saying these 3 cases are still under review. So I have no idea if they're planning on doing anything with him or not. But that was one where, I was told a few times not expecting anything there. But I've also been told that by not people inside the building or anything, but just league sources out there that perhaps Quinshon isn't going to get any league discipline either. So I really don't know. I really don't know how it's going to go down for any of these guys. But I do think that the Browns have what they need to accomplish the running game effectively until he gets back. They've got their leading rusher from last year, Dylan Sampson. Their changeup sort of third down back has looked good in camp. Rocket comes in here with a good reputation of being very explosive and able to produce some yards. And, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. They've got their practice squad guys in Marshall and Williams. So they're going to be able to run the ball. They've got a good offensive line, and they will be able to get their ground game going, just not to the extent that they will when Quinshon is back.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the show. Hey, by the way, so Glenn Cook talked to the media yesterday. Is he supposed to tell you guys before they've officially signed Bailey Zappe that they're signing Bailey Zappe?
No, these guys are very, very, very strict about the rules. And if a guy is not signed, they will not utter his name. They will not touch it. They will not go there. There were a couple of other guys yesterday, Malachi Corley and Cole Strange. They would not talk about them either. Until they are on their roster, they will not do it. And
of
so,
course.
How about off the record, Mary Kay? Did they ever do that off the record?
I'm sorry that came off as a stupid question to you, but I had to ask a stupid question because somebody decided to take up 20 minutes to try to make a stupid argument with me earlier
Mary Kay,
today.
How about off the record, where I see in plenty other organizations, they feel they feel comfortable sharing information to give
record,
reporters background or
reported.
To
now,
prepare them it. Or to even help the organization look better,
if it's
which could happen, as
record,
opposed to the shroud of secrecy
can't be
that
reported.
Revolves around somebody like Bailey Zappe.
Off the record
Bailey
is
Zappe,
off the
Mary
record.
Kay. That's going to give them the strategic win in week
Do
one.
Do you understand the definition
Bailey
of
Zappe,
off the
Mary
record?
Kay, got to keep that under wraps.
Mary Kay, I'm sorry my co-host doesn't understand
Bailey
what off
Zappe.
The record means.
Hey, talk amongst yourselves, guys. No, I'm just kidding. So, the different organizations do things differently. I mean, you see the messaging on injuries. Some teams will come out immediately after a football game and say, we think a guy's got a torn ACL, but there will be further testing tomorrow. The Browns are very conservative about that. They are not going to jump the gun on injuries. They don't jump the gun on roster moves. And that's just the way they operate, and we just have to deal with it.
Mary Kay, did you see the latest Deshaun workout video?
Yes, I have. I actually retweeted, put it in a story that I wrote about Deshaun 2 days ago, kind of outlining what is going on with him and what his situation is and what the outlook is with him. So he's coming along. I do know that Jimmy Haslam, Andrew Berry, and Kevin Stefanski all kind of stood and watched one of those workouts of Deshaun Watson the other day. They liked what they saw from him. They were very encouraged about what's happening with him from a health standpoint. He looks good. You would never know that he had retorn Achilles surgery in January right now. He has to be on PUP for 4 more games. But once you start to get into late October, they're going to have to make a decision on Deshaun Watson. Do they think about activating him, or does he remain on PUP for the rest of the season? So this is going to be something to watch as we approach the trade deadline.
Well, I want to ask, how cognizant is everybody of maybe the fans? Because, you know, we put up a poll and a lot of people voted. And now it's not the end-all be-all for crying out loud, but 86.9% of those polled asking, would you be open to Deshaun Watson starting another game for the Browns this season? 86.9% said no.
Well, would some of those fans say the same thing if they knew that perhaps they could get, and I don't know if they could get this, the version of Deshaun Watson that beat Baltimore in Baltimore a couple of years ago? If they got that guy, would they want him? Do they just not want the guy that they saw last year? Do they not want the guy that comes with the baggage? So it's kind of a nuanced conversation. If you could get the version of Deshaun Watson, who could win football games for you. And I don't know if that version even exists anymore, but I will say that he does look pretty good in these workouts right now. If you could get a winning quarterback, and not that he would have a chance to even play, but if you get to the trade deadline and you like what you see from Dylan and somebody comes calling for Joe Flacco, do you maybe think about putting Deshaun back on the roster as your backup and let Dylan play out the season and Shador play out the season, but kind of keep him as that one play away guy? I think that, you know, there's just a larger discussion here that is pretty complicated.
All right. Tony, got anything else for?
No, I appreciate that. And I'm sure, Mary Kay, if there's anything you want to share with me off the record to better prepare me for future interviews.
You can't share it on the record. You can't share it on
the
air.
More than well, there was no off the record.
Off the record means off the record.
There was nothing off the record yesterday either, I was told. So if there's anything you want to do to help better prepare us to do our jobs even better, feel free off the record to share that information.
I'll do that. I'll text away.
See?
But then he can't say it on the air.
That's how professionals do it, Mary Kay.
You're not a professional.
But it also helps give you proper perspective and background. Thank you, Mary Kay.
Mary Kay, I apologize for the silliness next to me. Appreciate your time. All the very best to you and yours.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot, the Cleveland Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com.
So to give people a glimpse, if you're just joining us live on YouTube, something we started this week, spearheaded around the entire company, from time to time, the two of us will get into a spat like that. And at times we will also have conversations while we have very important guests on and we waste their time during the interview. So apologize for that.
Does she feel like her time has been wasted?
I don't know.
I don't think she does. I think she enjoys it. That's all I'm pointing
out. We could have done that together live at her Bill Nunn Award party for the Hall of Fame. But you weren't there, Kenny. You got to both be there to waste your time.
I was busy, and my son was ill. He threw up on the bus yesterday.
I know.
Not good. Yeah, what are you going to do? It's time. Daryl's going to browbeat me coming up at 8:01, but it's a Aditi Kinkabwala right now. It's 7:22 on the fan. Hello, Aditi. Well, it's actually only 7:20. Hello, Aditi.
Good morning.
Aditi appears on the fan hotline. How do we start this, Tone? You raised the dander. You got the dander going, Aditi. Did we just give away?
There's another piece of this, too, though, that probably I didn't make as clear or as good of a point there. Pony asked me who is better right now at this very moment, and I said right now at this very moment, it's Kenny Pickett. But there's another piece here, is that the Browns, Andrew Berry and the Browns, aren't going to cut loose a guy that they just selected in April, but they also clearly believe that his ceiling is higher, that there is growth and development, that with growth and development and maturation and time, his potential is greater than holding on to Kenny Pickett. So there's another piece there as well.
Yeah, I understand totally where you're coming from. Pony can be almost as slippery a wizard as Tone. So
I thought you were going to play the part where I had to yell at him and say, can you at least let me finish a sentence?
Okay, I have heard
Do we have that? Do we have that in the system right now?
This.
It might have went through the system.
I'd love to listen to that back.
Do we have it? Let's play. Here we go. Let's play. Here we go.
They don't have a quarterback as a franchise. One guy's 40, and the other kid played like hot garbage in the last preseason game. Why would you jettison that guy just because of injury to keep a 40-year-old and a fifth-round pick who looked like dog vomit in his final preseason game?
Because I think ultimately, the Browns have always been looking to next year. That's part of why that
Kenny
engineered
fit into
that
next
trade.
Year more than Flacco or Shadur?
Oh, my goodness. Can I finish a sentence?
Yes, but I'm allowed to talk, too. I mean, it's not like I'm just going to turn the microphone off and let you talk
for
15
minutes.
I know,
of course not, but if you ask me a question, please allow me to at least finish answering the question before you jump in. The Browns engineered that trade out of the number two spot to get an extra first-round pick next year to increase their chances.
I totally agree with you, Aditi. He's a total ass. You don't have to say it. I'll say it.
I said please several times, though. At least I said please a few times.
Yeah,
we're very cordial.
Got a little high there, but
you're not gonna go down in the mud with him. You went to an Ivy League school. You're better than that, and we thank you very much for it. Aditi Kinkabwala joining us on the show. I mean, with the context, you're right. I think, but probably Aditi, what I'm frustrated about is that, you know, there's just this lack of clarity of what the goal is. And I think they've set themselves up there to try to thread a needle that's so, so small, because you're trying to win enough to stay around, but you're also getting ready for the future. And I also have these two quarterbacks where one has kind of been caught in the middle in the third round. The other one is his fan base, at least, is a force of nature that we've had to talk about him tenfold times more than any other fifth-round pick in the history of the NFL. And it's like, man, this is all before they even kick off against Cincinnati. There's just so much that we have to go through here, Aditi. I'm going, Where are we going to be at this time next year getting ready for 2026? We got to get some clarity.
Well, don't give up on this year by any means. I mean, this Browns defense is legitimate. The corner situation, there are still some questions there. I'm still feeling a little bit uneasy about the depth at corner and the slot corner position. But that defensive front, the depth, the talent, the way that Jim Schwartz could legitimately roll lines, I certainly haven't seen that in Cleveland since Jim Schwartz has been there. So that's exciting. Your two rookies that are starting on that defense, you should be as excited about them as you can be. I think the run game will be significantly improved. Everybody knows how much I like Joe Flacco and how great of a story that would be. And anyone who's watched him can still see that he absolutely throws a beautiful football. You know that he's seen everything that is there to see, his experience, his ability to manage everything in the huddle, to read coverages, to get in and out of good play calls, to use all the tools available to him. All of that you should feel good about. And he obviously takes great care of himself. You can sit here and say, okay, he hasn't started a full season since 2017. But you could also say, well, he hasn't started a full season since 2017, so there hasn't been that wear and tear on his body. And it's not like he's an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, whoever used his legs as part of his game, so his age is suddenly diminishing a piece of his game. That's not part of it. So you hope that he stays healthy. You hope that he does the things that they expect him to do, the things that Kevin Stefanski keeps saying, hey, this wasn't a competition won by default. This is the person that I felt most comfortable moving forward with. I don't give up on this season at all. The Shedeur Sanders things, guys, it's so hard. And I said this on the radio in Pittsburgh too. He's a really, really likable young man. And I definitely myself, just from my position standing on the sideline, the way that he followed drives his first game versus what he did his third game, the way that he was calling for the iPad the third game, the way that he was sitting and looking at what he had done. You can see it's a young man that is growing. It's a young man that is being exposed to new things and he's taking them in. What accompanies him, I don't know how much that's his fault. I don't see him out there screaming at his fans to call anybody and everybody who says that he didn't play well, certain names. You know, I don't know that he's encouraging that. It's just part of what comes with it.
Well, you are so right, Aditi, because so many people want to speak for Shedeur. And I've noted time and time again, you're not hearing anything from him. You're not hearing a peep. If anything, you're hearing a humble guy. And I don't understand where this is all coming from. The follow-up question I wanted to ask you, but Pony would have just screamed over you to ask it because that's his demeanor. It's very sad. Very sad state of affairs.
He's a pig.
You know, no business at this stage of the game. But the question I want to know is, would you say the same thing about Dillon Gabriel? Would you say that Kenny Pickett is ahead of Dillon Gabriel right now?
I don't know enough to make an informed decision on that. What I would read is that the Browns clearly felt it was close enough in that they are comfortable moving forward with Dillon Gabriel as their number two. If heaven forbid something happens to Joe Flacco and he can't go, they clearly feel that way, that they can trust and be comfortable with Dillon Gabriel. And I think we certainly saw in the way that he's managed the offense, the way that he has been very quick in recognizing what to do, where to go with the ball. The ball gets out of his hands really fast. He makes good decisions. He's obviously very comfortable in that huddle. He's a great leader already at this stage. They felt good about all of that. Maybe part of it, this is pure speculation, but we also heard ownership say that at some point you want to see the young quarterbacks. Maybe that plays into some of it. Maybe, you know, there are a lot of other things that happen behind the scenes that we're not necessarily always privy to. And I said this too, when I left Cleveland on Saturday after having done that game against the Rams, I felt really confident that Kenny Pickett was staying and that the Browns weren't going to move him unless they got some sort of exceptional offer. And I know that Kenny Pickett was very happy in Cleveland, really, really liked the coaching staff, really liked the offense, really liked his teammates, really felt that when he was healthy, he would be able to perhaps push the conversation a little bit. So I even though as soon as Aiden O'Connell got hurt, I had messaged a few people and said, oh, Kenny Pickett could end up there. I left the building. I left the stadium on Saturday thinking he wasn't going anywhere. In fact, I think I told my husband he's not going anywhere. But something changed in between then and Tuesday. And that might have been just a greater security in who Dylan Gabriel is and the stage that Dylan Gabriel's at. You know, it's something I can tell you about him that I've been repeatedly told is how quickly he learns. And he makes a mistake, and there's incredible confidence that he won't make that mistake again. How fast he absorbs what's taught in the meeting room and on the field. So those are things that you feel good about. I just hate that so much of the conversation is about all this other ancillary stuff. And I'm choosing to trust Joe Flacco, who said that the noise inside the building, the noise inside the quarterback room isn't actually that crazy. And that the quarterback room is pretty much like a typical quarterback room. So that sort of, I hope, gives fans some solace that even as everybody on the outside is sort of a Twitter and crazy and going nuts, maybe inside they're not really as affected by that.
Aditi Kingabwala joining us here on the Fan Hotline. You know, I wonder if we're asking the right question, because it's been, you know, ever since Joe was named the starter, it was how long's the leash on Joe? And I'm thinking, is that, hearing you talk, Aditi, maybe it's not the right question. Maybe the question should be, instead of the leash on Joe, is it more the process for Dylan? Like, hey, we can talk about a leash on Joe, but if Dylan's ready to take over, maybe even if they're a 3-3 team, say there's something like that, maybe it's Dylan Gabriel who gets put into the position.
I can't speak to that. I don't know. I remember in New York, it wasn't a leash on Kurt Warner. It wasn't a leash on Kurt Warner. It was Eli Manning. And I believe, you probably know this, I believe the Giants were 7-4, right? Didn't they have a winning record?
I believe so.
When Eli Manning ultimately went in. This is a different situation because I believe the Giants right now feel that they have their future in Jackson Dart. And maybe the Browns think that Dylan Gabriel is their franchise quarterback for the next 15 years. I don't know. But I know that the Giants think that Jackson Dart is their future. I don't think there it's as much about a leash on Russell Wilson and how they start the season. I think there it's, okay, when do we feel ready to put Jackson Dart in? When do we feel confident and comfortable with everything that's happening around the quarterback position with the New York Giants? That's something that the Patriots did a year ago when they didn't necessarily trust their offensive line. And so they threw Jacoby Brissett out there early as they tried to settle in before they let Drake May go in. I don't believe that that's the situation in Cleveland. I really believe the Browns can win games with Joe Flacco. You know how bullish I am on him. I've said that he was the better quarterback last year in Indianapolis. He did some pretty tremendous things without any preparation, thrown into games at the last minute, getting a starting assignment at the last minute. But in Indianapolis, you're not giving up on a guy that you used a number 4 overall pick on until you really have no other option. So obviously Anthony Richardson was going to keep getting every opportunity, even if Joe Flacco was the better option there. And if you look, these stats are running around. Like last 17 games, Joe Flacco versus Patrick Mahomes, it's jarring. Joe Flacco, it's jarring in the sense that it's essentially the same. It's very similar. I think Flacco's numbers are actually a little bit better. Joe Flacco can still play. The Browns are running an offense that they've had a ton of success with under Kevin Stefanski. They're not doing the nonsense that they did a year ago. They have 4 healthy veteran offensive linemen who've played together for a long time and feel good about where they are. And their left tackle is coming along. And clearly they like this receiver group and believe that there's a lot of potential in these young guys. So I'm not sitting here saying, okay, everybody, let's prepare for the Super Bowl. But I've said it and I'll say it again. I don't think the Browns are going to be as bad as sort of the national conversation seems to think they will be. I actually think the Browns can do some good things here. So let Joe Flacco go do those good things. And I don't know that the Browns are giving up on the season at 3-3. You look at the way the season starts, and granted, every single year is different, guys. So it's not, we can sit here and say, oh, that's a murderer's row. But I don't, coaches don't think that way. They don't say, oh, this team did this last year. And so therefore, it's sort of each week is its own new week. But what if Joe Flacco is 9-3? Why would you pull him? Why? You know, so I think this is all on the Browns offense and Joe Flacco and how they play. And it's all part of the puzzle in some way. It's hard. You now need to develop these young quarterbacks. You need to make sure that they get enough reps. You know that in the meeting room, your priority is to win games. Your priority is to prepare your number one offense and your number one quarterback. And that's on the field and in the meeting room. But simultaneously, you want to bring these young guys along so you get a really good handle on who they actually are and what their potential and their ceiling is.
At A. King of Walla on social media, did Micah Parsons, the haul that the Dallas Cowboys got, did it make you think about Miles? And could the Browns have got 2 first-round picks for Myles Garrett?
Oh, for sure. We talked about that in the spring, didn't we?
I'm sure we did.
Of course they could have gotten for 2 first-round. I think they could have gotten more for Miles than the Cowboys got for Micah, frankly.
I was,
but obviously, go ahead.
Well,
were you surprised? Were you surprised?
I was surprised they actually made the move. They've been through this a million times, and I figured they'd just sign him and everybody would move on and act happy. I heard Jerry Jones speak, and then I had a big pit in my stomach because I tried to apply logic to it before, but you know, I look at Miles, and I think Miles and Micah are in the same, I said they're in the same cul-de-sac of pass rushers. I mean, these are 2 Defensive Player of the Year candidates every single year. But Micah is 4 years younger, and I thought, man, you got to pay him once you make that trade. And I go, would we have got 2 first-round picks for Myles Garrett? Because I think by the end of it, they're both first-ballot Hall of Famers, Aditi. So it's like, well, we're splitting hairs here, except for the fact that one is 4 years older. So I don't know if we're getting 2 first-round picks.
I was told back in the spring when Miles first demanded, or winter, whatever we want to call it, demanded a trade. I spoke to multiple front office people who said, yes, he would be worth 2 first-round picks. Mm-hmm. And I remember having extended sort of, I mean, we don't ever get any input in this, but you can still have philosophical, rhetorical conversation with friends. I remember talking to a member of the Cleveland media, would you take the 1st-round picks and rebuild? And, you know, look, Andrew Berry got himself an extra 1st-round pick at the draft just a few months later. So you get a guy that affects the game maybe better than any other defensive player in the National Football League, a guy that offenses feel on the field more than perhaps anybody else. Plus, you got yourself an extra 1st-round pick. Plus, you got yourself a really good player to play with Myles Garrett and Mason Graham. You know, so we'll see how it all plays out. I think that you look at the Ravens and how Eric DaCosta signed Kyle Hamilton. And I think that they do such an exceptional job of signing their guys before it gets to a point where it can be contentious. Mm-hmm. And they don't worry about, well, we don't do this before this time period, the way, for example, the Steelers do and the mess that they got in with TJ Watt twice. I appreciate and I admire that approach. And I think the other thing that the Ravens do is that they recognize who their beasts are, who their engines are, and they don't really care if conventional wisdom or analytics say, well, you don't pay that position first, or this isn't the position that matters. If center is the position that makes your line go, and if that guy means so much to your team, then they pay their center. If this guy's a safety, and in general, you don't pay a safety before you pay an end, and a linebacker, well, they don't care because they love Kyle Hamilton. They think Kyle Hamilton is that good. They think Kyle Hamilton matters that much to their defense. So they go ahead and they pay him before any of the nonsense sets in. And I appreciate that at least. And I don't know that that gets enough credit. You know, this week we talked so much about the mess made in Dallas, but why didn't we talk about the mess not made, the mess avoided in Baltimore?
Aditi, thank you so much for the time. It's always wonderful when you join us. You know we're going to do it again soon. All the best. Thank you.
Anytime. I am always eager to join you. And Lima and Ken, thank you for allowing me to complete thoughts.
See, it's the two of us that we don't allow each other to complete each other's thoughts.
We'll be
well, that's
with each
fine.
Other.
You have each other every day. You can talk over each other. Yeah. But I get easily flustered when I can't get a thought out.
I'm sorry about Pony's behavior, Aditi. Aditi, thank you for the time. Goodbye. Aditi Kikabala on the Fan Hotline. All right.
He's got a very rosy prediction for the Browns to talk about the take on Ohio State, Texas. We head out to the Fan Hotline.
And we'll talk to Danny Cannell. Danny coming on courtesy of Bet Online. Check out betonline.ag for updated college football playoff, win totals, conference, Heisman, and college football week one lines.
Danny, welcome to the show.
How we doing, fellas? I like that get crappy with Zappy. It's kind of like suck for luck, you know, some of those tank for Tua. Like, we've seen some mantras before across NFL franchises. I kind of like that get crappy with Zappy. That's a good one. I like that.
I feel like if we do one for Shador, I'm going to get fired. So I think it's got to be get crappy for Zappy.
Yes, or with, I like that. I think that could be a good one.
Before we get to college football, I know you had a very rosy opinion of the Browns hitting the over this year. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You said 8 to 9 wins. Am I correct in that?
Correct, which I don't think is that crazy. So I was actually given a stat. I'm curious if you guys have heard this. I mean, you probably have because you guys are way more dialed in to the Browns than I am. Are you aware of Joe Flacco's stats over his last 17 starts?
Yes, I have seen that.
He's over like 4,000 yards. He's got 30 touchdowns. Like, if you put them together and compared him last year, he would have been top five in every passing category, except he also would have been number one in interceptions because he did have a lot of interceptions over the course of those games. I still think he's got some game left in him. I think he fits really well with Stefanski, what he wants to do. And I still think they could be competitive. And I, like, at the age of 40, like, I think 40 is the new 30 in the NFL because it's a game that's not the way it used to be where you just got lit up and it was such a physical game. I think that's why it's becoming way more commonplace for teams to give quarterbacks in their late 30s and early 40s opportunity because they're so protected. And there is a massive advantage to having the brain capacity and the knowledge of knowing everything you're going to see, being so familiar with a system, knowing where to get with the football, that you really, that's the luxury of being around the league for 15 or 20 years. You know everything that's coming at you. You know how to predict and kind of anticipate what looks you're getting, what checks to get into. I think that's something that's completely undervalued with Joe Flacco. Not to mention, I still think he can sling it a little bit.
So the bet here is just on and Joe Flacco alone, essentially.
Yes, I do. I think Joe Flacco, I am not a Shador Sanders hater, but I do think, I don't know how you guys feel about it. I have been exhausted by the amount of conversation and airspace that has been wasted on national shows. I get it if you're talking about him locally, but when was the last time you heard a fifth-round pick who is battling for the third or fourth spot consuming national shows on whether he's getting the roster and is there a conspiracy theory with the play calling and when is he getting playing time? It's been so absurdly over the top. It's just almost hard to bear. So maybe I find myself rooting for Joe Flacco, but I just think like Shador, and I would say Dillon Gabriel to this extent too. I did value Shador. I thought he was a better NFL prospect, but like long-term, I think if they had half the career that Flacco had, they would be doing jumping jacks. Like, I think that would be an amazing success for them. I think they're more kind of backup quarterbacks for the majority of their career that could play a really long time. Like, that's why I think they could be spot starters. I don't know if I see either one, either Dillon Gabriel or Shador, being a guy that you're going to break the bank and spend that $250, $300 million for as your franchise quarterback for the next decade.
Danny, I do want to get to a fair amount of college football here, but
We had this conversation at the beginning of the show because I think the Browns have told us they want ball control. They want a heavy emphasis on run. After last year, they want to try and minimize the turnovers to a excessive level. And I think that's interesting because so much of what you mentioned with Joe is there is the no risky, no bisky. There is the he might throw you 40 touchdowns, but he might throw you 20 interceptions. Do you let Joe Flacco cook this year, or do you try and, I don't want to say risk neutering him in the name of, turning down those turnovers?
Well, see, that's where I think you trust Flacco, and that's something that young quarterbacks always have a very tough time learning, and it's sort of a skill of the risk-reward aspect of when to take those shots versus when to pull it down. I mean, Brett Favre never really learned it. He was kind of always that gunslinger. You kind of took the good with the bad. That is not what you're looking for from Joe Flacco. But I do feel like in some of those games that he put up some of those numbers over the last 17 starts that he's had, he was put in adverse situations where you're kind of putting him out there to chuck it around. You're kind of playing from behind. So it makes it a little bit more understandable. I would expect him to clean up a lot of those interceptions as long as the Browns are competitive in the games. And I do think with the run game they bring and a defense which is pretty salty, I do think they can be in a lot of one-possession games, and that's where the advantage of experienced quarterback comes into play.
Danny, over to college football, there's a lot of new in the Ohio State-Texas game. Ohio State's got 8 new starters. Texas has basically a whole brand-new offensive line, just one returning starter there, and obviously 2 new quarterbacks. We've seen a little bit of Arch Manning. We've seen very, very little of Julian Sain. What's your early read when it seems like it's almost impossible to gauge how good these teams are going to be?
It's so tough. I mean, I was doing a breakdown of the game yesterday and was looking position by position, like who do you give the edge to? And, it was like I gave the edge at quarterback to Arch Manning because at least, like you said, we've seen him a little bit more. I gave the edge at wide receiver to Ohio State because they've got Jeremiah Smith. But it was really tight because Texas has some pretty good young wide receivers, too. Running backs, I gave a slight edge to Texas because they have a guy coming back in Trey Wisner and a guy back from injury in C.J. Baxter. But like offensive line, it was almost a toss-up. Defense, really close. They both have a lot of question marks. Did give the edge to Texas there. But like overall, when you tally them all up, it was still like split right down the middle. So it is a really hard game to handicap, as well as it is hard to handicap most of the teams that are in the top 10, top 15, because a lot of teams have question marks. That's why I think this season is set up to be maybe one of the more entertaining seasons that we've seen in my 15 years covering college football because it's so wide open. I do think, for me, I trust Ohio State more because they're playing at home. Like, even with a new quarterback, being able to communicate at the line of scrimmage is such an advantage. Like, being able to have a third down where if you have to check the protection, your offensive line can hear you no problem whatsoever. With some new members in offensive line in Texas, that will not be the case for Arch Manning. When he's trying to operate, it's going to be much tougher to communicate. For his tackles, it's going to be very hard for them. They're breaking in some new tackles as well. It's going to be very hard for them to have clean, get-offs because they're going to be struggling to hear Arch Manning. They'll probably go silent counts. Then they have to watch the edge rushers for Ohio State try to go off reaction. Those things make it really, really challenging. So I think this game is really evenly matched. And the point spread shows you why. I mean, you get 3 points for home field, and they give Ohio State 2.5. So even the odds makers are thinking it's exactly down the middle.
Danny Cannell on the fan hotline here with us, getting you ready for Ohio State, Texas. I thought it was interesting it's taken this long to get here, but it does seem like this week we've started to hear pushback on the Arch Manning hype based off what people saw last year in limited play or based off just the idea of the changes there in Texas. Do you still believe that the Arch Manning hype is substantiated, even though we haven't seen, I think it's over 100 career passing attempts from him?
I think it's so over the top. It's impossible. Like, I feel bad for Arch Manning because he really hasn't asked for any of it. And I do have to give him a ton of credit because I think he's handled it really, really well. Like, he's said and done all the right things, and yet media just gravitates to him. I cannot remember, Tebow had some hysteria, but that was really after they won the championship and he won the Heisman. Then it sort of blew up. Same thing with Johnny Manziel, who had hysteria around him, but that was sort of after he broke out. Nobody even knew who Johnny Manziel was when he took over the starting role for A&M. I kind of have to go outside the sport of football and look at a guy like LeBron James, who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a high schooler, to remember anybody with this sport of sort of expectations heaped upon him. And I think it's impossible for him to meet those expectations. And I, for one, am one that thinks Texas, it could be more of a roller coaster ride for them. I think he's going to have first-year starter struggles just like everybody else does. I know he's played some, and he's been at Texas for 30 months, so he feels pretty comfortable in that system, but he really doesn't have that extensive experience. And even when he did, they did give him an opportunity versus Georgia last year at home, and in that game, he looked pretty overwhelmed, just like Quinn Ewers did. You know, he didn't look like a superstar in that game. I think if the sky is the limit for what he could be, but I think it's going to be much more of a roller coaster ride for Texas, which is why I actually have them at 9-3 and missing the playoffs. Their schedule is a little bit tougher this year. I think last year, as much as people just were willing to discard Quinn Ewers, he stepped up in big moments for them and got them a couple big wins. I go back to last year at Michigan in the Big House. He played spectacular in that game. In the playoffs, they had a fourth down conversion to save the game. Their season was on the line. They had to have a touchdown, and he gave it to 2 years ago. He goes into Tuscaloosa, throws three touchdown passes, and I get the upside that you want to have Arch, and I do think there's a higher side upside with Arch Manning, but I think people are totally discounting the quality play they got of Quinn Ewers for the majority of his career.
2 years ago, Michigan won the national title and sent the most players to the NFL draft. Last year, Ohio State won the national title, sent the most players to the NFL draft. Has the Big Ten passed the SEC as far as not only the quality of players, but now you look at the teams, and even teams like Penn State are at the top for this upcoming year?
I mean, I think it's unequivocally yes. It's interesting that the SEC, for a long time, they love to talk about the national championships and how many they had won consecutively, or how many they'd won 13 of 15. And, you know, they're touting all these statistics, and all of a sudden they're trying to move the goalposts and saying, well, we have a tougher schedule and we've got tougher players, but they're not winning the national championships. And even more so, they're not even getting there. And I think the thing that has changed dramatically is the transfer portal and the NIL era, where you cannot hoard talent the way the SEC did through their run of dominance. And in large part, a lot of it for a long time was done illegally. Everybody knew what was happening, but they were buying the best players in the country and able to hoard them. And I think there's a lot of schools. Clearly, there have been a lot of schools in the Big Ten that have been doing it as well. But from top to bottom, I would say more of the schools in the Big Ten were trying to do things the right way or didn't have the resources to have bag men to go out there and make those cash payments. Well, now that that's sort of been leveled and everybody's above board and the Big Ten can buy players too legally, I think that has absolutely leveled it. I do think the SEC is deeper, slightly deeper than the Big Ten. But watch out for a lot of those middle-of-the-pack teams in the Big Ten, because I think they've made some significant strides in narrowing the gap of both the SEC and the top of the Big Ten. I think absolutely the Big Ten needs to be taken seriously. If you're not, I'm willing to say they're the better conference in the SEC, but if I think at the bare minimum, you have to say they're on level playing field with the SEC.
Danny, one of the I guess, narratives last year that happened with Ohio State, with all the talent they had, all the wealth of the $30 million roster, whatever it was, is that it almost didn't matter who the quarterback was because there was just such a wealth of talent on both sides of the ball, and also including the wide receiver and running back room. Do you, if you believe that was true last year, do you feel the same way this year with what Julian Sain has around him?
No, because I do think there's so many new pieces. There's so many moving parts. And I do think Jeremiah Smith is the best football player in the country. And if I was talking to Julian Sain, I would say find him early and often, and even if he's double or triple covered, just you have to force the ball to him. And I think Ryan Day will do that, and Brian Hartline. But mentioning Brian Hartline, you also have a new play caller, which this is a pretty significant shift, because at least with Chip Kelly last year, he had been a play caller before. Brian Hartline is entering entirely new territory. And I do think you'll see Ryan Day step in more, whether it's on game day, whether it's in the game plan. I do think you'll see Ryan Day be more involved with the offense to kind of make sure that that transition is pretty smooth. But you also did have that roster, which had so much talent around there. I think even Emeka Buka, who probably didn't get enough credit, eventually ended up being a first-round draft pick, probably didn't get enough recognition. You had both backs in the running in the backfield, which were so good. And then you had the leadership on the defensive guys, guys like JTT and Jack Sawyer, who were there on the defensive side of the ball. That team just really had a very clear-cut identity. So I do think it's a little unfair to Julian Sands just to expect him to step into that offense and things to go perfectly for him. Because much like I said with Arch Manning, I think it could be a little bit bumpy for Julian Sands. He's trying to figure things out, and a lot of the pieces around him are trying to get sorted out as well.
Danny, I'm so torn on Penn State because I love Drew Aller. He's from just down the road in Medina County, where I reside, where I'm from. He's got, I think, everything you need to be a really good quarterback in the pros. And yet, I do not trust James Franklin as far as I can throw him, and I can't throw him very far. Where do you sit on Aller and whether he has the goods to take Penn State to the elite level, maybe even compete for a national title this year?
They are my national championship pick. Like, I am picking Penn State. So if you're asking me if I'm a believer, I'm saying yes. But I do think it is a step of faith on my part to trust that Drew Aller is going to take that next step. Because if there's been one issue, you know, I know James Franklin, he's 1-15 against top five teams since he's been at Penn State. And that's been a record that he has got to change that narrative. And even last year with their success that they had, they still haven't done that because they haven't been able to beat those teams that are better than him. But Drew Aller, the problem that he's had is he has vanished on the big stages. You know, whether it was against Ohio State, whether it's been against Michigan, whether it's been with an opportunity to have the game-winning drive against Notre Dame, instead he throws an interception. Like, he just has not, and without a completion to a wide receiver, he has not stepped up in that role. But I do think there's a few things why I think he can take that next step. One thing is his familiarity with the offensive coordinator, Andy Koltynecki. Last year was year one, and I thought Andy Koltynecki did a really good job of getting scheming guys open, and I think he's going to be much more comfortable in that system, operating with confidence without having to think so much. They also went to the portal and got him three wide receivers, so hopefully they boosted that position. They're going to need a lot of receiving production because Tyler Warren, the tight end, was a phenomenal weapon that Andy Koltynecki used. But I, the reason I like Penn State and as a whole, one, I do think Aller takes that next step. Sometimes it takes time. And I think the Big Ten Championship was actually a game which he played pretty well in, even though they lost. I thought he stepped up and made some big throws. I think they have a lot of commonalities with what you saw from Michigan and Ohio State. You see a bunch of players, the backfield, and Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. You see a guy like their center, Nick Dawkins, some players around the roster that could have maybe made that jump to the NFL. They decide to come back, and there's sort of this mantra, this belief of we want to come back to do something special. And that was the exact same thing you saw from Michigan and Ohio State. Plus, the schedule is as favorable as anybody in the country, and I do think that matters. They really have a two-game schedule with Ohio State on the road and Penn and Oregon at home. I think they split that. I think they could lose at the shoe, but I think they get the best of them, of Ohio State in the championship game and the Big Ten championship game. And I think this is James Franklin's year to finally silence some of those critics.
Danny, great stuff, buddy. And a lot of that's because you just said nice things about the quarterback I like. But we really appreciate you, buddy. Great stuff.
Awesome, man. Enjoy the games this weekend. Great catching up.
Thank you so much. Danny Cannell there on the Fan Hotline.
And Danny coming on courtesy of Bet Online. Check out betonline.ag for updated college football playoff win totals, conferences, Heisman, and college football week one lines.
We'll react to what he had to say about Ohio State, Texas. And you're either going to love my comp for Drew Aller, or you're going to hate it. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.